Hello and welcome to the Tala STEM Podcast, episode 269 with your host, Mark Mayo. I was thinking of doing one of my grand sweeping intros into this week's podcast, but after two defeats, Reading FC have left a bit of a sour note on the opening couple of weeks of the season. To join me in talking through what is going on at Reading and whether we should actually be too worried about it is Alan West. Westy, for fans of the podcast or for newcomers to the podcast even, one of the forefathers of Reading FC podcasting, it's great to have you on for the new season.
Thank you, it's good to be back. I always enjoy it, you know that.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully you've found something to enjoy over the last week, because we've got Reading 2, Bristol City 3 to talk about at the Select Car Leasing Stadium, and Coventry 2, Reading 1. So let's jump into that in just a second. Before we do that, as ever, a big thanks to ZCZ Films, our sponsors, and Patreon subscribers all around the world who send us a little virtual tip every now and again, which goes into upgrading our technology and all sorts of stuff, and hopefully we've got something in the works as well to increase our presence around the Madstad, which hopefully will be sorted out in the next couple of weeks. So without further ado then, let's get on, talk about a couple of defeats.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Let's start with Bristol City then, for those who weren't keeping on tabs of what Reading did on Tuesday night. Two early goals, really, Westy, and that was pretty much it. This team, certainly under Veljko Paunović, but stretching back even further, has not been one of the sort of classic, memorable nights at the Madstad of bringing back a two-goal deficit to go and win 3-2 or anything like that. And really, this game was just a kind of an annoying one as well. Obviously, going down two goals early on, but then you get back to 2-1, and you think, let's have a big onslaught. Let's really go and put the opponents under pressure. And at the start of the second half, we ended up conceding again, lost 3-2, and just a frustrating night all round.
It was a frustrating night. I mean, I didn't lack enjoyment. I must admit, I quite enjoyed the game. But to shoot yourself in the foot like Reading are doing over the last, it's not just this season, it was the back end of last season as well. I mean, I think a lot of the fans have brought up the zonal marking, and I think it reared its ugly head in this game especially, because we basically conceded two goals in very similar fashion. My take on it is he has to address that rather quickly, because that's costing us goals pretty much every week. And my theory is, and again, even when I teach kids, I say the same thing, if you're your zonal marking, and if you notice, Bristol City done it, and a lot of the other teams are starting to do it to us now, they're tending to stand off us. So when the corner's coming in, they're sort of outside the box, and our players are in their zones. Now, if you're doing high jump, you're not going to get over that bar by standing underneath the bar and then flipping your back over. It's not going to happen. You need that momentum. And what teams are doing is they're attacking the ball, whereas we're stood in areas. Of course, they're getting a jump on us and getting opportunities to score goals. And I think in Bristol City game especially, even from the throw-on, is a similar situation. It's showing that zonal working is clearly not working for us. And teams have quite easily figured out that's what we do, and that's how they're attacking us. I think even moving forward to this week's Saturday's game, very similar situation there, where they could have quite easily had a goal from a corner. We all notice it, so I'm surprised that the managerial team hasn't done something about it up till now. What do you think, Mark?
Yeah, I agree. The thing is, after the Bristol City game, I was doing the player ratings for the Tala STEM website, and I slowed down the highlights, kind of, you know, try and do a bit of SkyPad analysis, basically, and slowing down the highlights, you track the runner, and you're absolutely right that they just start, they don't have a man. Typically, when a goal is conceded from a corner, you say, that's the marker. Oh, he's made the error, so therefore I kind of pin it on him. A little bit rudimentary, but you say, well, that's how it works. But with this one, there's kind of several players who are at fault for letting people drift in, and then also none of them at the same time, because they're obviously told to stand. There's kind of a bank of five and then another bank of five. And then, you know, they manage to just drift through and get the finish. And for it to happen twice for Bristol City, I think that's just the galling part of it. And if certain managers, zonal marking becomes a little bit of a cherished child, doesn't it? It's something they don't want to let go, because they kind of just believe it ideologically to be best. And you hope that Paunović isn't one of those coaches.
But I mean, I don't know if you noticed what I noticed. If you're doing a high jump, you have to have a run to get over that bar, don't you? So you're automatically saying that to run and jump high, you've got to make a run to start with. But our players are stood still. They're flat-footed, basically. So when that ball gets put into that box, the players that are attacking the ball are already up in the air and they've all got advantage. Like you said, there's no responsibility for defending, is there? It's like if you're Tom Holmes or Morrison or McIntyre or Moore, you would say to the centre backs, right, you pick up their big men, wouldn't you? Stay with them. Don't let them get away from you. That way, if they do score, you can say, well, that's your mistake. You know what I mean? We know that's your mistake. In this case, like you said, there's three or four players stood in areas. The guy's already got the jump on them and we're conceding goals, but there's no accountability for that because no one's out to take accountability because they haven't got to mark anybody. It just seems to me that needs addressing rather quickly because that's costing us week after week. And then that Bristol City, I didn't feel Reading were that bad, really. I thought they were okay. I'll say it was a good game of football, but just marking and defending from players of experience like Morrison and Moore, you expect much better. But it doesn't stop there, does it? I mean, I always say this whenever I've been on the show before. Defending is a team game, and we're supposed to have two holding midfielders. So why are we conceding so many goals?
Well, this is the thing, and looking at the Coventry game as well, it's so hard to pinpoint something as well, I find, because you look at last season we did say that Ajari and Mate as the wingers, they didn't track back particularly well. So Rinomoto and Laurent, they haven't got any less coverage. I don't think the wingers are good at tracking back now, but you know, at least with the formation we have at the moment, it's the same. Basically, nothing's changed in terms of what the defence has to do. Yes, we've got I don't think McIntyre at left back works. He's obviously there because we haven't been able to get anyone in at that position yet, having lost Richards. And yeah, he's
there, Mark. Sorry to butt on you there. McIntyre in that game against Bristol City, I didn't really know where he was playing at points. He seemed to be all over the pitch. He was well forward. Quite a lot. And then other times he was the other side of the pitch. So I don't know if he didn't know or he was getting instructed to do that. But a lot of the time he wasn't even in the back three or playing left back. He seemed to be all over the pitch.
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? And we've gone to the back three and obviously gone away from it now. Because Ethan Bristow was playing as a left wing back kind of role and he didn't really know how far forward he needed to be or dropping back in. There's obviously, you know, you're talking both of those are young players. One of them's playing his first 2 weeks of Championship football, it's probably the wrong thing to do in terms of hoping that they're going to be able to form a partnership that quickly. And ultimately, I think Reading have just as you say, with Laurent and Rinomoto, who I don't think they've had a bad start to the season, but there's just something fundamentally wrong about how we're conceding so many chances. And I've got some stats actually going forward to the Coventry game. And this is a little bit of a barrage of numbers, but I'll try and drip feed them in, is that against Coventry we allowed 11 shots from inside our own box in the second half alone, 18 over the entire game. So 18 shots from inside our box fired in by Coventry. That's the most in the Championship. Even Birmingham, or most in the Championship that weekend, even Birmingham, who won 5-0 at Luton, had fewer shots from inside the box than Coventry did against Reading. And is this game management? Are we just completely unable to hold on to the ball, do the dirty work, you know, hold on to balls instead of doing the counter-attack, win a foul up the pitch?
Yeah, again, I said defending is a team game. And now, again, you can point out the fact that let's face it, I mean, I looked at someone I always look at his comments, Sam Richards. I normally agree with him 100%. And he's right in a way. I think a lot of people are forgetting that because defending is a team game, if you're missing your best forwards, which we are, Mate, Zhao, and I always say, if Reading haven't got Zhao on the team, you may as well scrap it off for a defeat, because no matter what you say about him, and sometimes he does appear lazily, he's such a threat, and he can hold a ball, and he's tricky, and he's a worry to the other side, that they automatically defend deeper. With Puskas up front, he doesn't strike any fear into me or anybody else, I wouldn't have thought. So you've got Mate missing, you've got Zhao missing, you're missing Ajaria. You've got no Elise. Richards is not there anymore. These players are top Championship players. And without them, automatically teams are thinking, well, there's nothing to worry about. No one's going to beat us over the back. You know, I mean, no one's going to get over the top of us. No one's going to dominate us in the air going forward. So automatically teams push up on you because they think there's nothing to worry about behind them. So that puts pressure on the whole side. And that's what we're seeing here. If you haven't got a goal threat at the top or you ain't got a player who can hold a ball, or Matthew thinks, we haven't got nothing to worry about today, so let's push up. We've conceded 30 shots on goal in two games, okay? And from 13th of March, when we played Forest, we've conceded 26 goals and scored 18. Scoring doesn't seem to be a problem. 18 goals in 15 matches isn't that bad. It's just over one a game. But 26 goals, and this is not a new thing, You know, we've conceded goals at the back end of last season, the point I'm trying to make here. So that needs addressing, doesn't it? That's a clear, clear problem. But going forward to this season, we've got a much weaker side. I mean, a much weaker side. And we're not going to scare anybody with what we got on the pitch at the moment, I don't think.
No, and the thing is, I mean, I won't go too hard in on Puskás because we have done a lot on the podcast over the last couple of years, but you can just box him off. You can just keep him in front of you and you know, the ball goes into his feet. The control isn't that brilliant. He's not going to turn and run past you. That's fine. Aziz, obviously, we've seen flashes of his quality. Obviously, he's got a bit of a finish on him, got a couple of goals so far, but, you know, how far that's, how much he's going to grow into the season is kind of TBC. And then, yeah, on the other flank, without John Swift, who's obviously had an amazing start to the season. And I suppose, you know, you're saying without Jowell, you can scrap off the Reading game for a win. Without John Swift at the moment, we'd be in serious relegation sort of levels. And I wonder, is John Swift's form enough at the moment to kind of keep us out of a relegation battle?
No, I don't think it is. I thought Bristol City dealt with him quite well, actually. I thought he was quiet on Tuesday night. I thought they marked him out of the game. They stopped giving him space and
he dropped a lot deeper, didn't he?
Yeah, he faded out of the game as the game went on. Johnson's a good player. We know he's a good player. But like I said, without those outlets, without the players in front of him to really stretch sides, we're always going to struggle. And that really needs addressing. Again, I didn't want to have a go at Puskás. So I know that a lot of players, he comes in for a lot of criticism recently and people saying, you know, we're not playing to his strengths. I still fail to see where his strengths are. He's not good in the air, not a good finisher, not quick. His first touch is abysmal. I watched him Tuesday night play with the boys when he was a senior professional on the pitch. Every ball bounced off him. He come on against Bristol City. First touch he had went out for a throw on and the second one out for a goal kick. Now, if you're telling me we're not playing to his strengths, please let me know what they are, because he's not even a good finisher. So for £8 million, I expect much, much more. But this isn't about him this week, obviously. Coventry game, not his fault we got beat. Let's not pin it on his head. But I see one fan wrote, oh, you know, we can't have a go at Puskás this week because he tried hard. Surely that's the minimum requirement. I expect everyone to try hard, but I expect some end product or something that I can look at and say, you know what, he's great in the air, or he's got a great touch, or he brings players in. He doesn't do any of that. So I don't see why £8 million is getting you nowadays.
No, I do wonder whether the John Swift as a false nine argument starts coming into play. If you just put your best player as far forward as possible and kind of work from there, maybe.
I think the young lad from Watford just come in, Bashiri, I think he looks like a good player. I mean, he was good against Bristol City. When he came on, he made a definite difference. He was good on the ball, reminded me a bit like a Jara, but a bit more sort of thrust to him. And I think he'd be a good signing. But even he's getting played out of position at the moment because we're like putting square pegs in round holes. But I think he'd be an acquisition. So it was good to see him come in. If I could take one positive from the Bristol City game, that would be it, because he looked like he could play.
Yeah, Tom Deli Bashiri on loan for the season for Watford. Last point, a couple more points actually, because we'll talk about the final goal in a second. But a bit more stats for the Reading's ability to control games, I think, just kind of shows itself from the Coventry game. Reading had 43% possession at Coventry. Nothing particularly wrong with that, but in the first half, passing accuracy of 80%. In the second half, 69%. Won 55% of our duels in the first half, and then it dropped to 41% in the second. So I just feel like that just kind of sums up what's going on at the moment in terms of being able to keep hold of the ball at the right moments and being able to, as I said, the game management earlier, just letting teams do what they want to you. One other bit from the game then that did anger fans, and I suppose this is almost the insult to injury aspect of it, and I suppose in a way it does kind of prove that Reading are close to getting points. You know, we're close to a point against Stoke, close relatively against Bristol. Tim Teller saying as the Coventry win went in, 52 minutes and 7 seconds have been played at the second half, supposedly only 6 minutes of stoppage time, which if you play the full amount of 6 minutes, that's a minute and 7 seconds over. So was this, for you, did this kind of, I think one of my friends who went to the game said that he wasn't actually angry because we did kind of deserve to lose it at that stage, but I suppose in a way it does perhaps just show that Reading aren't getting properly booted off the park. If this is the best Coventry possible and the worst Reading imaginable, they could only beat us this time in, you know, the extra time, as it were.
Yeah, again, put our full strength side on the pitch and we probably won the game. But the issue is more for me is we haven't played anyone yet. I mean, we've played sides that, let's face it, if they're in the top half, I'd be surprised. Coventry, Bristol City, Preston, they're not going to be top championship teams. We've played nobody. Can you imagine putting that side out that finished that game against Coventry, not being able to dominate a game against Coventry? No disrespect to them. Then compared to like last year, I know they had a good run, but realistically, if they finish in the top 10, they think they've had a great season, even the top 12. We're losing games to teams that ain't going to be nowhere near the top. So when we play your West Broms, your Fulhams, somebody better, QPR at the moment, what are they going to do to us? Because these teams are not having too much trouble scoring goals against us, and we don't look like winning games comfortably, that's for certain. I mean, even the Preston game, you go back to the Preston game the other week, it was only because Raphael kept us in it last 3 minutes, so they didn't get a draw against us, and they were poor. I mean, the first half, they were abysmal. We let them into the game, and we was lucky to get away with 3 points in the end. I mean, a draw would be all they could have wanted, really, from that, because they were not in it in the first half. So that's my worry, is the fact we haven't played anyone yet. We've got Huddersfield this week. Again, another side that's poor and going to be down the bottom. If they turn us over as well, then I think we've really got to start pressing the alarm bells, because we've got better sides to come, and I think they should have no trouble rolling us over based on what's in so far.
Well, speaking of alarm bells, we'll head on to the mailbag in a second and hear what social media has to say. And there's no shortage of alarm bells going on around there.
Always busy when you're losing.
Absolutely, yeah. Velka Pavanovic, first up, though. Let's hear from him, and then we'll go into the mailbag.
Yeah, unfortunately, we dropped 1 point, important point, on the road. I think the team worked very hard. I think we sacrificed a lot. A lot of players played with a lot of issues, but we managed to actually play a very good first half. And I believe in the second half we had, at the beginning, good opportunities to increase our lead. Unfortunately, we conceded the first goal, and after a couple of minutes of being knocked down, I believe that we recomposed ourselves and started to play well until the last seconds of the game. I think that was a big giveaway, and it costed us a lot today. But we'll work to improve, and we'll look to not repeat these mistakes.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Loy Royal kicks us off then with, he asked us for, or he or she, so I say, would be good to get your two good, two bad so far. Mine are good, fans back with great home atmosphere and the young starters doing okay. His bad, bad again, sorry, anonymous accounts, I'm not very good with knowing who's talking. Defensive mistakes and game management are the bad. I would say, just to throw in all my four, as it were, the fact that we've actually, as I said just a minute ago, we've been in every game, with slash only losing by one goal in each time, I suppose is a good thing relatively at the moment. And John Swift has been my good point at the moment. For the bad, the shabbiness of the goals we've let in, which we've gone in so far, and the late heartbreak as well. Having to, you know, the Stoke game and the Coventry game in particular, if those goals go in 15 minutes earlier, you probably get a bit less annoyed, or at least you have a bit of chance to get back in it. But Reading conceding so late into games is just not, it just leaves a bit of a sour taste, doesn't it?
Yeah, they'll kill a blow. It's great when it's you, but it's not so good when it's the other way around. I think for me, Aziz has been refreshing. Nice to see another player come out of the youth team under 23s and make an impact in the first team. Again, he's got a lot to learn, but like you said earlier, he's come in, he scored two goals. I thought he was excellent. His first home game got him behind defences, which is players we haven't really got that much of. Even Ajari doesn't often get in behind players. Very tricky, but doesn't make them run some sort of penetrating run. So that's been good. Again, fans being back, I'm pleased that they moved the 1871. I know a lot of people aren't, but I think that will catch on as time goes by.
Yeah, I thought that was a no-brainer almost.
Yeah, again, it links the crowd, doesn't it? It stops them being stuck in the corner. So I think that was a great idea, and I think that will work wonders as the season goes on, as I said. For me, zonal marking, I think they've really got to address that before it's too late. And obviously the injuries has been a bad thing for Reading, because let's face it, we have had our best players injured, and they're very difficult to replace.
Yeah, I think Zhao and Meite not back till January. Hopefully get Ajari back soon. Not a good situation. Looks like Tom McIntyre might be out for a couple of weeks as well. Sean Burgess said, what would you say is the song you'd most associate with Reading FC? I saw your response to this on Twitter. If you want to, are you sticking with it, or have you decided on?
I think I've got to stick with that one. That's pretty much says it all, I think.
So what? That was Michael Jackson, wasn't it?
Michael Jackson's bad, yeah. Can't get much worse than it's been at the moment, so bad's good enough for me.
See, I think Thriller is probably a good one as well, because that it has actually been, you know, if you're a neutral or if you just happen to be around in the local area that Reading are playing any given weekend, you go along to watch Reading games. There's going to be a lot going on.
I think for Powell now, I think a man in the mirror has got to take a look at himself and make a change as well. We could do quite a lot of MJ numbers, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I've kind of run out there, so I'll swiftly move the conversation on unless you've got any more to throw in. But yeah, no, it really is a entertaining stuff. I remember the dog days of Stam and Clement and everyone saying, let's get some entertainment going. Well, you know, this is it. If you enjoyed the Stam's 1-0 wins, then you couldn't complain about the entertainment, because this is what it looks like. Benjamin Vickers saying, can we pinpoint exactly what the defence was doing well last season but not now? Is it a personnel issue / lacking pace at left back now Richards is gone? Did Elise do more defensive work than Swift? I don't think that Elise did particularly any defensive work, so I don't think it's that. Richards obviously gone has not helped, but the set pieces, as we've said, the zonal marking, it's not worked. I just don't see why we would be able to, you know, do zonal marking better last season compared to this season. So in terms of, as Ben says, what exactly has changed in the defence, I suppose it's a little bit of the organisation's got worse. Yes, the personnel's got a little bit worse as well. And maybe teams are just wising up to us.
Listen, like I said earlier, I mean, we've conceded 26 goals in the last 15 games, spanning the back end of last season and this. That's a lot of goals. We wasn't defending well at the back end of last year. So it's a myth to think that we were, because we wasn't. We were poor at the back end of last year. That's why we didn't end up in the playoffs, because we couldn't defend.
Yeah, not going to argue with that. One point, and I think it seems like we've done well to avoid the topic for now, but I suppose as soon as you open the floodgates, these things come in, is the future of Veljko Paunović coming in there, with Andrew Smith saying, why do supporters think it is possible to get rid of Paunović? Per Sandwich Man saying, has Paunović actually improved us from the work of Bowen and Gomez? And Southbank sending in, correct me if I'm wrong, but has Paunović just completed 50 league games? His league record is 120, drawn 13, lost 17. I checked this before the thing podcast. He's done 53 games overall at a win percentage of 37.7. Bowen was 35, Gomez 23. Paunović is better record than Adkins, but worse than Stam, which I think probably feels about right. Although Adkins did obviously have about 10 games in the Premier League, just getting trounced every week, so not too favourable for him. But on the Paunović situation, I suppose that it's just, for now, the fact that we are only, what, 5 games into the season, including an EFL Cup Academy game, it's, for me, it just feels a bit too early. And we, you know, we've come up with all these criticisms and everything, but ultimately you have to give the manager time to work them out.
Again, I've said about Paunović, he's a likeable guy. I think those first 8 wins from the start of the season really has skewed them figures quite badly, haven't they? Because it was such a great start.
But it counts, though. It all counts.
Yeah, it all counts. But in his defence, he hasn't been able to sign anybody. He's lost his best players. We only just missed out on the playoffs last year, rightly or wrongly. I think you can't... What do you want him to do? I mean, there's stuff that glare in the obvious, like we've discussed, but what I'm saying is, until you've got a manager that can bring in his own men, you can't really judge him. And I think if you was to sack him now, who's going to take the job? Who would want to take a job at Reading at the moment when you can't buy no players, your best players are injured, and your two youngest bright sparks have been sold from underneath you, which is no fault of his own? The issue's much deeper than Paunović, I think, at the moment, and he hasn't had a lot of luck this start of this season. But I think you'd have to stick with him. I don't think pushing the panic buttons worked for us over the last 3 or 4 managers, and I don't see why it would happen any quicker now. I think you've got to give him time, and ideally give him his own players, but that looks unlikely at the moment.
Yeah, I think if you go from since Dion came in, our owner, you go through the managers that we've had, we've gone from Clement to Gomez was an improvement, Gomez to Bowen was an improvement, and Bowen to Paunović was an improvement. Now, that's not going to last forever. Paunović to whoever's next, I can either imagine us, you know, the bringing in a Neil Warnock type, I don't think is going to fix things overnight. You know, do you want Tony Pulis coming into Reading? Not particularly myself. Or you're going to go for a young manager from low in the leagues, which we've actually never done under this ownership, so there's no reason to think we would do that. Or we'll just pick someone else from abroad who we've not heard of, who hasn't got a great sense of the Championship, and then we just, what's, how's that any different? So how's that an improvement?
No, so it's no different. And Gomez, to be fair, was given top players to get us out of trouble, wasn't he? I mean, Martinez in goal is showing now that we already knew that he's one of the best goalkeepers in the world, especially he's one of the best goalkeepers in the Premier League, definitely. And over the summer, he showed what a great goalkeeper he is, and that made a massive difference. But if Panovic has been given players like he's been given, what do you want him to do with them? Do you know, we've got no strength in depth, and it wouldn't matter who came in, they're still going to struggle until them players are fit and raring to go. Then you can judge him, I guess. But even so, he's still not been able to bring in his own men in the 18 months he's been here.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with any of that. And the thing is, as you know, we've got to, this season, hopefully, I think the main thing for us as well is just obviously making sure that it's not a complete write-off in October, that we have had, you know, four out of the last five seasons, basically, or three of the last four basically have been write-offs. In this time, 2 months' time. So hopefully that's what Paunovic can reverse and actually keep us interested and keep us in the season. And one big part of that is what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks of the transfer window, the final couple of weeks. So let's go into News Bites now and talk about the latest player that Reading have signed.
Send in your views to thetarnhurstend@gmail.com and have your say in the mailbag.
So, Westy, we're talking about Femi Azeez earlier and the fact that you want someone with a bit of pace, someone who can drag the game from one side to another and make the opposition think twice about what they're going to do. And Junior Hoylett has a pretty decent reputation over the last 5-6 years in the Premier League, probably even longer than that, actually, of doing just that. And he is a Reading signing, 1 year deal, free agent after leaving Cardiff in the summer. And I think this is a deal. Is pretty much just, it's as good as Reading can really hope for at the moment, and it adds something that we don't really have.
Yeah, that's right, it does. He's a player that has been around the Championship and again the lower leagues, lower end of the Premier League, for a number of years now. You worry about his fitness, obviously. He's been chucked straight into the side, but he can't be, I would have thought he's anywhere near match ready yet, and that could take 3 or 4 weeks to get him near to sort of his peak fitness. But like you said, as the position we're in at the moment, a player like Julian Hoylett is an improvement. And what we got sat on the bench and the weakness of the squad, I think it's a good acquisition for a year. It's no risk for anyone. And hopefully he can chip in with a few goals, as he has for other clubs.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's just what we've got to hope for. I know I said a couple of weeks ago that there's no point signing free agents if they don't bring anything. But hopefully Julian Hoylett, with a bit of experience and everything, is the sort of player who can bring something in. It looks like Yuri Ribeiro, the ex-Nottingham Forest left-back we were speaking about recently, is not coming to Reading. He's off to Poland. And then a couple of other names. This is the time of the month, really. You can tell that players who are getting a bit of cold feet, they've not been able to make the move that they had hoped to have made maybe by this point of the summer. And we're getting linked with all kinds of names. Max Lowe of Sheffield United is a left-back. There's a talk of Chelsea left back Baba Rachman, who I think he's on 50 grand a week or something. The chances of him coming in on a loan enough to be completely free. So really, Reading, I mean, the Hoylett deal was at links a couple of weeks before it actually happened, and it then looked to have gone quiet. So in terms of Reading fans eagerly anticipating a particular player, I mean, just generally, maybe it's just better to wait and see what's going on with that. But do you think, Westy, do you envisage that there will be two or three players coming in between now and the end of the window?
Yeah, definitely. I think it'd be a case of, because our wage structure is sort of defined now by all reports of $8,500 a week, I think you'll find a lot of players will leave it till the very last minute before they decide where they're going to go, see what offers they've got on the table, and then take one. And I'm sure Reading will be in the market for probably 10 or 11 players at the moment. But all these players will be waiting to see what deal they can get, I'm sure. But obviously when the transfer window, that turns, doesn't it? And plus, you're going to have players from the Premier League that have got young players, young up-and-coming players. We've had a lot from Chelsea over the years, haven't we? I'm sure that they'll start releasing them as it gets towards the end of the transfer window. And hopefully, I mean, we desperately need someone up front, don't we? So you'd hope that there's a young up-and-coming top striker sat on the bench, well, not even on the bench, in the under-23s at Chelsea, something like that Reading can pick up and hopefully sort of kickstart our season a bit. That's the fingers crossed. Who that might be, I think that's all going to be a mystery to all of us.
Yeah, Paunovic was saying a couple of days ago that because of Zhao's injury, that has kind of shifted the priority away from a left back, where we do have two players who can play, up to a striker with only got really Puskas and young Jamari Clark, who came on against Bristol City in Coventry. as options. And yeah, I think that's the fact that the Premier League squads, they have 25 men they can pick from, and that selection has to be finalised by the 1st of September. So in the next week or so, they will be telling players, you're not in it. And those players are going to be turning around to their agent and saying, go and get me somewhere. I don't want to spend the next 6 months in the academy training, whatever. So that is going to be a very busy time, and Reading are going to certainly have their ears to the ground for that. Let's cover off the other Reading teams then before we go into big match preview. The women's team kick off on the 3rd of September. That's against Man United on Sky Sports as well. A Friday night kickoff to start the WSL season. So big chance for Reading to show their credentials at Man United in just over a week's time. The other 23s drew 1-1 with Newcastle to kick off their PL2 season. 78th minute penalty from Kelvin Abraham-Chowman rescued the point. They've got Wolves on Monday the 23rd, aka as we're recording this now, it's about 7 o'clock kickoff. I think it's free as well at the Select Car Leasing Stadium. And then they've got Stoke away on Sunday 29th. So if you're just listening to this as it's gone live, get yourself down there. Under 18s, they lost 1-0 to Fulham. So two defeats and two to start their season. And they've got Leicester on the weekend. Reading FC men's senior team have Huddersfield on August the 28th, 3 p.m. Saturday kickoff. Let's talk about that now.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Well, Wes, if we do it again then, but at least I think it's definitely a good thing we haven't got a Tuesday night kickoff this week, because the more time spent on the training pitch, you hope at least will make Reading better, unless they're going over the zonal marking routine and decided that everything is absolutely fine and that they don't need to change that at all. But Huddersfield, they heaped misery on Sheffield United on the weekend with a last-minute winner after a last-minute equaliser for Sheffield United. So they've 1-2, drawn 1, lost 1 so far, for what that is worth. A couple of trivia questions. Can you tell me that the last time Huddersfield claimed a victory against Reading?
No, I can't. Was it a while back? I know we drew 2-2 last game of the season, didn't we?
Well, it was the playoff final.
Is that what it was last time? And that's a 0-0 draw, really, is only a show.
Yeah.
I remember to go to Huddersfield before they moved grounds when Steve Francis had just signed for them. This was back, well, must have been late 90s. And we beat them 3-0 as we went up that year, and they were particularly poor. And I always remember my mate Simon shouting at Steve Francis. He was just in front of us in goal. He shouted at him, great career move, Francis. So every time I think of Huddersfield, I always remember that little jibe he spent our old goalkeeper.
And the last time Reading won from behind.
Wow. You must be going back a bit there. Not sure. Enlighten me.
Well, that was January the 2nd, away at Huddersfield with a 2-1 win. Two Lucas Schau goals last season. So it's been, obviously it's summer break, but over 8 months now since Reading claimed a victory, having been behind in a game. And really with Huddersfield then, as you said earlier, this is a team that Reading, you know, there's no particular reason Reading should go there thinking they have to win. We're not in the stage of the season with must-win games, even against a team, Huddersfield, who, I agree, I think mid-table would be a pretty reasonable finish for Huddersfield this season. But I suppose this is the sort of game where we just find out a bit more about Reading. Are Reading going to be a sort of team that can bounce back from these poor defeats and actually go on a bit of a run now? Is this going to be the norm? Or is this actually the high point of the season? Are we going to go and find out that Reading are a team that loses 3-0 in these sort of games? It's a good litmus test as to where this Reading team is at this season.
Yeah, and like I said, we haven't. I don't think we've played anyone yet. I don't think we've played anyone that's going to be anywhere near the top. So it's a sort of game that you would hope, or you need to get some points out of, isn't it? I mean, Huddersfield away, as you said, they're not the sort of team that historically beat us often. So you'd hope to get some out of it, even if it is a draw, just to get some points on the board. And the Championship's always been like that. Every season's the same. You lose three games, you look at you're going to get relegated, you win two or three, and all of a sudden you're on the brink of the playoffs. It's going to be no different this year. I mean, I was staggered that two games in, nobody had won both games. So that sort of shows you what sort of league it's going to be. And going back to Sheffield United, I mean, they're shocking. They're really poor. I mean, you come out of the Premier League, expect a bit of bounce, but sort of a bit more fight in them. But they are really, really on the floor. And I would be concerned for them going straight back down through the divisions.
Yeah, no, it's quite remarkable. There's actually a few in, I can see parallels between Sheffield United now and the Reading side that came down in about 08 post the 106 season, where they've kind of kept the same team together and not signed particularly well. Obviously, that Reading team had some real quality in it and did have a goodish season that year. But the Sheffield United team, I think they're just, you know, when players have been playing above their level for quite a while, there's a bit of a, you know, every action has an equal and opposite reaction, and that's kind of what we're seeing now. But that is the Championship, as you say. You know, Bristol City lost to Swansea after they beat us, and Preston have kept being bad, and Stoke have actually looked good. Coventry are, you know, fourth, for whatever that matters at the moment. So it's just the good thing about Reading season is that that's the Championship, and any team in the Championship is capable of going on a little bit of a run.
Yeah, and I've said before, you could probably lose 10 games and still win the league, which doesn't happen in too many divisions. So, again, don't get too downhearted, but I think we can all see the problems that are ahead of us. I mean, the surprise package for me had been QPR. I mean, they won a game the other week with 10 men for virtually the whole game. So it goes to show the sort of strengths that they've got.
Yeah, they finished the season well last year as well, QPR. Let's talk predictions then, because there was some heartbreak of different kinds at Coventry, because Sim and Ollie had both put 1-1s in for their prediction. Someone, however, only one person actually predicted a defeat in either the Bristol City or the Coventry game. So only one correct prediction this week, and that was Mr. Alan West with a 2-1 defeat to Coventry. So you've taken first place with 7 points from four games. That's more points than Reading have. So
it's a good start, isn't it? That's probably the best start I've ever had to the prediction league.
Well, you're on 7, Ollie's on 4, Ben on 3, Handbags on 2, myself, Adam and Sim all on 1. So far too optimistic. So as obviously you've got your finger on the pulse for this Reading team, it's good to have you on this week, and you can sign off with a prediction for the Huddersfield game.
Well, unfortunately, I mean, if you look at the stats, what we talked about, 26 goals in 15 matches, I can't see Reading keeping a clean sheet, because they've only kept one in any of the 15. Okay, tell me that was against, Mark, if you want to play the trivia game. Kept a clean sheet.
Our last clean sheet. Oh, God. No, I can't think of...
Ooh. It was Luton, 0-0.
Of course, because we beat Derby. I was thinking that's the only other win. Derby and Preston are two of the only wins that we've had in the last 6 months. So they were obviously both conceded in them.
Yeah. So I can say Reading are going to concede. And unfortunately, if it's for the prediction league, with my head, I can see another defeat coming. No jail, no win has always been my motto. So I'm going to stick with, I think they'll get beat 2-1.
Yeah, for the process of being different, I'm going to say a 1-0 defeat, because, you know, our goal scoring record has actually kind of outperformed us so far. So let's see if that keeps going. But I think I'll say a 1-0 defeat for Huddersfield, and sending us into an international break, that wouldn't be very fun. But alas, as you say, for the prediction league, sometimes you've got to go for your head. So cheers, Westy, for popping on this week. It's been a pleasure to have you on for the first time this season.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I think it's my 14th or 15th season now, so I'm racking them up. So thanks for having us on. I do appreciate it.
And a couple of those seasons recently have been decent as well. So.
I think I've had the odd one or two throughout the seasons. It is the odd one or two, though, to be fair.
No, absolutely. But hopefully Reading can go and show all the naysayers and the critics of Veljko Paunovic that there is life in the old dog yet, and that Reading can go to Huddersfield on Saturday and get a win and take us into the international break with a little smile on our face and into the transfer deadline as well. We'll be talking about that next week when we're back after the Huddersfield game to see how Reading fare in the final hours of the window. Let's hope that there's 3 points on the way, and about three players as well would be pretty decent. Thanks for listening, and come on, you Arse.
You smile, funny how the crumbs always leave. You smile, funny how the crowds always